So I can give you my comments, although it comes out of my time. I think that's a very simple structure that Shep was showing. And I would hope it'd be much more interesting down at 3 to 5 Schwarzschild radii. Okay, so I'm going to talk more about Sagittarius A star. Basically, it's a talk about where is Sagittarius A star in infrared images, and what do we learn from that? And also, how does it move, and what do we learn from that? And here are the collaborators who have worked on this project over the long time. There's Carl Menten, Reinhard Genzel, Thomas Ott, Rainer Schertl, and Andreas Eckhart on the infrared positioning. And my other German colleague on the motion right now is Andreas Brunthaler, who's now at Jive in the Netherlands. So I'm going to try to address these 7 questions in 20 minutes, and I'll have to keep it very brief on each. Is Sagittarius A star at the center of the stellar cluster that's seen for the proper motions? Is the stellar cluster tied to Sagittarius A star? Is Sagittarius A star at the dynamical center of the galaxy? That's a kind of big topic. And does Sagittarius A star have a peculiar motion of its own? Given any peculiar motion, does it have most or all of the mass sensed by the stellar orbits? If it doesn't, could some form of exotic dark matter dominate in the galactic center? And finally, can intermediate mass black holes be constrained by the motion of Sagittarius A star? Okay, first to talk about the radio infrared frame alignment. To keep it very brief, basically you need objects that you can see both in the radio and in the infrared. And red giant stars are great. They're really bright infrared sources. And these stellar sources have masers in their atmospheres and their extended photospheres, which are very bright in the radio. So basically, you map these masers by using Sagittarius A star itself as a phase reference, so you know exactly how far away they are from it and at what angle. Then you take an infrared image, and using the masers as a grid of sort of test points, you can solve for the infrared plate scale and rotation to exquisite accuracy. And then you just have a translation left, and you just align the system to align the radio with the infrared, and that tells you exactly where Sagittarius A star is. So to do this, what we did is over many years now, we've gone to the VLA and searched for silicon monoxide masers mostly in near Sagittarius A star, around red giants. We now have about 7 of these SIO maser stars within 12 arc seconds of Sagittarius A star. The positions of these stars are typically measured to about a few milliarc seconds, and the proper motions are measured to sort of a milliarc second per year precision in a few years. And you actually have to keep up this reference frame because everything is moving, and so you sort of have to redo this every couple of years, and so you can predict where the stars are going to be at any one time. So we have to keep doing this for the rest of our lives. In terms of the proper motions, the VLBA, the Very Long Baseline Array, can really help because you can actually, in 3 months, detect the motion of these stars very easily, in less than one observing season in the infrared. And here are 2 contour maps, one dotted, one solid, of the SIO masers around a red giant star. And you can actually see that it's been moving from the solid one to the dashed one toward the southeast. And the motion is a few milliarc seconds per year, directly visible. Okay, so we have a group of about 7 objects. This is not a very great image. Here's the galactic center region on an infrared image. These are the stars that we have measured SIO masers in. IRS-7, for example, is a very famous bright infrared source. It's a supergiant in the galactic center. It stands out on all the images. And the proper motion vectors are indicated by the arrows. And a proper motion vector that big is about 200 kilometers per second. So basically when we did this first in 1995, we were able to locate the position of the galactic center in between stars S1, S2, and S3, but essentially in a totally dark area, and put an upper limit on the flux density of Sagittarius A star at 2 microns. And since then, obviously, we do know that the source has flared and does flare, and at this point it was just not flaring. An interesting aside in this process that's of interest to this meeting is that when we did this in 1997 with Carl Mentin, Andreas Eckhardt, and Reinhard Genzel, we detected also some water masers. Here's a water maser, which we, in this case, comes at the exact position of this infrared red giant star, which is totally expected. Here's an SIO maser from IRS-7 aligning right with the star. Here's another SIO maser aligning on the star, and at the bottom, there's yet another aligning with the star. There was one oddball here, which is a water maser. I'll show a better picture of it here. It's a water maser of about 6/10 of a Jansky at a high radial velocity of about 160 kilometers per second. And in the infrared image, it didn't line up with anything. And at this point, we were kind of annoyed at this, and we said, well, we've probably just seen a star-forming region maser, since water masers do form in star-forming regions. And we're, you know, kind of annoyed to have this in our sample here, but actually it's kind of interesting based on this conference, and that this probably indicates there is a massive or intermediate mass star formation going on at some point near the galactic center. This object is projected only 5 arc seconds, or less than about 2/10 of a parsec from the galactic center. And it's at a fairly high radial velocity, so it's almost undoubtedly in the galactic center region. So I think we'll have to go back and start looking for more star-forming regions and see how many we can detect in this. So getting back, though, to the talk, basically we can answer question one as follows. Is Sagittarius A star at the center of the stellar cluster? And by Sagittarius A star, I mean the radiative source. And from the radio infrared alignment, we know it to better than about 10 milliarc seconds at this point. Yes. Yeah. Well, then you have to go to either Andrea's or Reinhardt's groups if you want to sort of say that what is the center of the entire cluster. And I think that's in this range of 10 milliarc seconds, depending how you define the cluster, right, Andrea? Well, it's really the registration. And in some sense, you can test it then against the gravitational center, which has been measured by the dynamical center, which... No, I think that maybe that's not a good word. Well, I think... I thought you did better in one of your early papers on that. But I'm going to run out of time here, and this is a small point. Okay, we can discuss it later. It's an interesting point. Probably the stronger point is it's within 10 milliarc seconds of the gravitational center of the orbits. Okay, and that's the important point really for what's going to come. Okay. We try to also consider the velocity alignment of the infrared and radio reference frames. And there are 4 objects that you can do this with. They're labeled here, IRS 7, 9, 10, and 12. And basically you can measure the proper motions in the radio, which are listed in this column, in milliarc seconds per year toward the east and toward the north. And this is relative to Sagittarius A star, directly, the radiative source. In the infrared, you can do the same thing, but it's relative to the average of all the stars that are used to define the reference frame. And if you notice, I don't really want to go through this whole table, they align pretty well. In fact, all the signs of these columns agree here. If you take a difference, here are the differences with their errors. And 3 of the 4 stars work very well. If you look at IRS 9, you get a 1.6 milliarc second per year difference between the radio and infrared, plus or minus 0.7. And then declination, 1.9, plus or minus 1.2. There's one ringer in here, it's IRS 12, which has sort of about a 5 sigma deviation in right ascension and about a 2.5 sigma deviation in declination. There's something wrong either with the radio or the infrared measurement of the proper motion, and I can tell you it's not in the radio. We've done it both with the VLA and with the VLBA and get the same result. It's one of our best sources. My guess is this is maybe a binary or some confusion that is affecting the infrared proper motions, and I keep trying to tweak the infrared observers to look at this, but they're so busy doing more interesting things that they don't do it. If I take all 4 stars, even the bad one, you get an unweighted mean of about roughly 1 plus or minus 1 milliarc second per year in each axis. If you take out the outlier here, IRS 12, these numbers will be cut in about half. And a milliarc second per year is about 40 kilometers per second at the galactic center distance. And so basically the infrared and the radio frames are aligned already to within about 70 kilometers per second, and if we take out IRS 12, this would be about 35 kilometers per second. So that means that the motion of Sagittarius A star in the infrared frame is less than that number. You could do it with one star, because you're just aligning frames. Okay? But those stars are measured relative to a large number, and I'll leave it up to the infrared people to tell you how many and exactly the details of that reference. It's how many? Roughly 100? 100 stars. Okay, so maybe I won't get caught up in the same thing. Is the stellar cluster tied to Sagittarius A star? And I think in velocity, and the answer is yes to better than about those numbers. Okay, let me get on to the proper motion of Sagittarius A star. This is basically a VLB A experiment where we have a planned view of the Milky Way here, Sagittarius A star at the center, the Sun here, and the Earth going around the Sun. And the Sun is thought to move at about 220 kilometers per second in its orbit about the galactic center at a distance of about 8 kiloparsecs. And those numbers give you about 6 milliarc seconds per year is what you should see for an apparent motion of Sagittarius A star caused by the motion of the Sun around the center of the galaxy, because it's a nearby object relative to distant quasars down here. And the project has a long history. We started it in 1979 to do this, and it didn't work at all. And the main reasons are those similar to those discussed by Shep in the last talk. Sagittarius A star was scatter broadened, and you really have to go to high frequencies to get through the interstellar electrons. And the early telescopes had very limited sensitivity. This really required the VLBA. And so here's basically how we do it in 10 seconds. Sagittarius A star is here. This is a background of a 90 centimeter long wavelength image of the galactic center made with the VLA. We use two background quasars, J1745-283 and this other one over here. They're about 7-tenths of a degree away from Sagittarius A star, one north and one east. And as I mentioned, we'd expect about a 6 milliarc second per year motion of apparent motion of Sagittarius A star along the galactic plane toward the southwest. And that's what we should see. And that is what we do see. So here we have the plane of the sky. Here's east offset and north offset. It's 10 milliarc seconds between big ticks. And in 1995, Sagittarius A star was up here relative to one of the background quasars, the strong one. We have a strong and a weak one. 1996 it was here, and every March or so it marches down. And the latest measurements are in 2003 down here. And plotted here, the dashed red line is the best fit, weighted least square fit to those points. And the solid line is the orientation of the galactic plane. Now, the orientation is known pretty well, which is the slope of that line. Certainly, the location of the galactic plane is not known to milliarc second accuracy, so I had the freedom to slide the blue line vertically up and down. But you can see that the slopes are different, quite different. And that, I'm going to tell you, is due to the small motion of the Sun out of the plane of the Milky Way. So we can convert to galactic coordinates instead of RA and DEC and see this a little better. In galactic longitude, we have a position versus time for Sagittarius A star relative to a background quasar. And in galactic longitude, it's streaming down at the 6 milliarc seconds per year that it should be doing very accurately. And in galactic latitude, it's hardly moving at all. But there is a slight slope to that line, which you could see in the previous plot. Okay, let's first talk about the motion in the plane of the galaxy. We measure a motion if we convert it to unconventional units like kilometers per second per kiloparsec. We measure 29.4 plus or minus 0.2. And that's a direct measure of theta naught over r naught. This is the rotation speed of the Milky Way of the local standard of rest, plus the small component from the sun, divided by the distance to the galactic center. And one can compare this to measurements done in the local region, local solar neighborhood, using Hipparcos stars. You can measure Oort's A and B constants, and A minus B over R naught should be comparable to this, especially if the galaxy has a flat rotation curve. And the two numbers differ by about 2.2 plus or minus about 1 in the joint error. So they differ at about the 2 sigma level, which I don't at this point consider very significant. Yeah, I said for a, it, yes. Well, that could be explained by a slope in the, or a wiggle in the rotation curve. Most people think it's probably pretty flat, but that's the difference between the numbers. Basically, assuming it's flat, which would tell you something about that number. Yeah. Really? That started 5 late, right? Didn't it? Okay. Motion out of the plane is very small, as you can see here. Let's look at that a little better. Here's a blow-up of the galactic latitude motion. The blue points are the data points. The blue dashed line is the best fit least squares fit to that. And the purple-red arrow there is the motion of the sun out of the galactic plane, which is about 7.2 kilometers per second with an uncertainty of about 0.3 or so, using large numbers of stars, essentially just averaging them. And it's from the Hipparcos data set. The difference between these two would be a measure of the peculiar motion of Sagittarius A star, and this is our number, 0.4 plus or minus about 0.9 kilometers per second. That has a distance in it, but it's a very small effect. You can scale it if you want by 5 or 10%. It won't change any arguments. So can we quantify a mass limit for Sagittarius A star? And here we get into some more detailed discussion. Given I got a few minutes left, I will skip a lot of it. You could argue maybe Sagittarius A star is some low-mass X-ray binary that's orbiting another supermassive black hole. It has to be within 100 AU because of the alignment of the infrared and the radio reference frames. And those within 100 AU, objects like that would decay by gravitational radiation on very, very short timescales. So a more theoretically flexible model would be some stellar stars in the galactic center, stellar remnants, dark matter, and you put some Sagittarius A star at some radius from the center of that and ask yourself how it would move. And basically it would move very, very quickly. These are families of curves where beta is the mass distribution spectral index, so density going is 1 over r squared, for example. And the two families are for the dark matter being essentially all the mass in the galactic center, and the dashed lines are for only 10% of the mass of the galactic center. And the whole point of this is you get huge velocities here of 100,000 kilometers per second because there's just a lot of mass pulling on the object. And our measurement's way down here. The same can be said for accelerations. You get the same effect. Our measurement is way below the accelerations you would experience. But there is a problem here, and that is all of these orbits would be very short in period. They would have orbital periods in the 1 to 10 year range typically. And we made measurements over 8 years and draw a straight line through it to make a velocity measurement. And so we might not be sensitive to those velocities depending how things go. But all is not lost. We would certainly see the position excursions. So if Sagittarius A star were orbiting about any sort of dark matter system at a radius greater than a couple of astronomical units, we would easily see this. And these dashed lines here are meant to indicate about the absolute magnitude that one could have for an excursion of the orbit of Sagittarius A star. And it turns out to be about a quarter of a milliarc second in right ascension and a half a milliarc second in declination. And that gives you a few AUs for the maximum possible orbit. So Sagittarius A star either must essentially contain all the mass, which it almost certainly probably does, or it must be bound to something within about 4 astronomical units. And that already sets a very stringent limit on the density of material of something like 4 million solar masses within 4 AU. But you can try to do a little better. You can now go on and look at what would be the expected motion of an object as a function of its mass that's in a sea of some sort of gravitational material. And there have been lots of papers on this recently, on the Brownian motion of a supermassive black hole in a lot of material. Here are the papers. This is the most recent one. It does a very nice Bayesian analysis, and it says that the velocity you'd expect for Sagittarius A star, were it to contain all of the mass in the central region, as it's perturbed by stars outside of it, would be about 0.2 km/s. And that, given our measurement uncertainty in the Bayesian analysis, that Sagittarius A star must contain more than about 10^5 solar masses. So I'll skip my approach to it, which gives you about the same answer, and go quickly on to two other topics. Very quickly. Okay, what if there's a cluster of dark stellar remnants in the galactic center? Certainly the infrared stellar orbits allow something like 10^5 stellar remnants to be in the central 100 astronomical units, or even a little further out. And that could perturb Sagittarius A star, even if it's a very heavy object. And you can calculate the effect of, what I did was 5 × 10^4 stellar remnants as a function in a Plumber distribution as a function of core radius, sort of from 1 parsec to 1/100 of a parsec. And you get fairly big motions. You'd expect one component of Sagittarius A star's motion to be about 0.3 km/s from such a cluster. So we're very close to being able to measure that. Let me just skip to the intermediate mass black hole and quit here. Were there an intermediate mass black hole somewhere in the galactic center region, it would tug on Sagittarius A star and we should see its motion. And the characteristic motion you should see is about 1.5 km/s for an intermediate mass black hole of 10^4 solar masses at a distance of 10^4 astronomical units. And that's about what we could be detecting already. And so you can look at this paper by Hansen and Milos, and basically we can almost exclude objects at the 10^4 solar mass range in this radial range. It's a little more complicated than this equation up here, and all the details are in this paper. And so the only caveat would be if there was a motion out of the galactic plane, in the galactic plane, which we would not be sensitive to. And I just point out that IRS 16 southwest is out of the galactic plane, and IRS 13, although near the plane, has motions. The bulk motion of that cluster is out of the galactic plane, so it probably should apply to both. And so I'll stop here. Okay, that I'll tell you exactly what. That's right. So what it is, it's a measurement of the motion out of the plane in one direction, against out of the plane of the Milky Way. So I project the motion we measure relative to quasars in that direction, and then I subtract from it the motion of the Sun, which is 7.2 km/s, and I get the −0.4 ± 0.9. Very simple. Yes, it's 0.3 is the uncertainty from the Hipparchos stars.
So what about
in the plane? In the plane, it's tough. It's about 15 km/s or less. And it basically would come from differencing the Oort's constants measured by Hipparchos from mine. And that's one measure of what you would think the solar motion, the local standard of rest motion should be plus the solar motion. It's not nearly as good, so yeah, that's right. So if it were to be in the plane and moving in the plane, the orbital has to be in the plane, then you have no limit, really, that's significant at this point. Nor will we probably ever. Unless there's some way to find out what theta naught and r naught are independent of this measurement. R naught, I think, will be done soon. But theta naught is a very difficult measurement to make. Edge on is okay as long as it's not in the, it's got to be out of the plane. That's right. Doesn't have to be edge on. These are proper motions. We would have to improve our angular resolution, our decrease our systematic source of error by about a factor of 2, and then we could consider trying to get a measurement to a few percent accuracy in a few couple of years or so. Right now, it would take, you know, 8 or 10 years of lots of observations, and I don't think I could get the observing time to do that. We need about a factor of 2. Our current measurement uncertainty per measurement is about 100 microarc seconds in relative to the quasars. And that's about the magnitude of the effect of the trigonometric parallax. So we've really got to cut that down by a factor of 2 and then use root n statistics to get down to a few percent. Right. This is at this limit in here is basically that's how far you could see an orbital excursion if it got in close. If it gets in very close, the excursion is so small we would not see it. It would be less than a quarter of a milliarc second, which is sort of our limit. So it's both the orbital excursions and the velocity that give this sort of complicated formula, which I can't reproduce with one line here. So you'll have to look at the paper. Well, two things. It's projected within 5 arc seconds of the galactic center. Well, and it's moving at 165 kilometers per second radially. And that can't happen from a projection along the line of sight to the galactic center where they're always zero until you get to the galactic center region, and then you can pick up a big velocity very easily. So exactly where... Sorry? From what? I mean, from a star. Located where? Halfway between us and the galactic center? That's pretty unlikely. I don't know the statistics on it. I think it's going to be, you know, that would be a 10 sigma result. I'm sorry, I have? Well, I'm really interested in the infrared data because I think that is the best way ultimately to get our knot, unless we can move the VLBA to the southern hemisphere, in which case I could easily do a trigonometric parallax of great accuracy. And so I'm a curious observer and very interested to see if it ends up at 8, 7.5, 8.5, I don't know. That's certainly all within the uncertainties these days.